Hello and welcome to another episode of the RevVR podcast. I am your host, Reverend Kyle. I should say I first, and then we'll get to our guest, but I am back from Oculus Connect 3. I'm back from Steam Dev Days. My voice is just a little crackly still. I am still trying to recover from all the awesomeness that has occurred over the course of the last couple weeks. But man, I'm exhausted. I'm tired. And you know, it's interesting. You have conversations with people throughout the course of going to these events. And you realize that despite the fact that you have been hanging out with so many awesome people over the course of the last couple years, that you, as a terrible, terrible host of a wonderful podcast, has neglected some of your very special and good friends, people who have been hanging out with you for a very long time. You have not had some of your good buddies on your podcast. And I realize that, you know, 100+ podcast episodes, you would think I would have gotten to everybody, but there are just so many amazing people in the VR community. And it's just, I feel terrible that I have committed this sin on the VR community by not having all these wonderful people on my podcast. And so we are going to begin to perform some level of penance. We are going to ask for forgiveness, and we are going to do what's right. And we are going to bring these folks on to the RevVR podcast and give them a voice and give them the ability to come on and preach, evangelize the words of VR. And so, to begin with my reconciliation to you, the VR community, I bring on my guest for today's episode, a very, very good friend of mine. He is a man of large stature in the VR space. Keith Kaiserschott, VR developer. Keith, how you doing today, buddy?
Oh, you were talking to me. Oh, okay. No, if anyone should be asking for penance, it should be on this side, man. I mean, you're the reverend. I should be confessing my sins to you, good sir.
But Keith, I'll tell you what. You know, you've been involved in. Actually, I'm not really sure when we first met.
You're not a Bay Area local, so it wouldn't have been at one of the SVVR meetups. I want to say it was probably something either Oculus Connect or an SVVR conference.
I feel like it had to have been
Connect. It was before you moved to Seattle.
It was well before, yeah, because you actually show up, you know, it's not 100% true you've never been on anything. You actually were on a few, like, multiple people podcasts. So I want to say you were at the Beach House for Connect 2.
I know that.
I know you were there for that. You weren't there for Connect 1, though, were you?
No, I was not. Okay. That's correct.
So it's very possible that it was either Connect 2 or that prior SVVR Expo. One of those two is where we would have met.
That sounds right. Were you at the first SVVR? Because I vaguely recall seeing you, but not introducing myself.
Right, yeah. So I was there, and at the time, you know, we were still a very young community, and not a lot of us knew each other. And so, yeah,
right.
We were probably both there, but didn't
interact. I think I had heard of you, but I did not know you by sight.
Well, maybe that's why you were staying
maybe
from, because you had heard of me.
that's it. Okay, so
there we
sometime
go
within the past, maybe 2 or 3 years.
Right. But yeah, I mean, you've been, you know, part of the group, the old gang, dare I say, the VR mafia? No, never mind.
The first rule of the VR mafia.
I'm sorry.
We do not talk.
Yes.
About VR mafia.
So you're in the Bay Area.
Yes, I am.
It's a pretty booming area for virtual reality, I would say, just in general. It's pretty big area.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's where SVVR kicked off, and I've been going to I've been to every SVVR meetup except the first one and last Thanksgiving because it was over Thanksgiving. The only reason I wasn't at the first one is because I didn't know about it. And I'm sure you know Tipitat. Everyone knows Tipitat.
Absolutely.
He was the one who told me about SVVR. And I went to the second one and thought, geez, this is amazing. This is the kind of place that I want to be every day. So been to everyone since that I could go to.
These are my people.
Yes, yes. And that's how I get to meet so many of you. And that's how I really got to be part of the community that I didn't even know existed prior to SVVR. So it's been great.
It has been. It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, you and I were hanging out. Actually, man, I saw you a lot over the course of the last couple weeks. I mean, I'm starting to get tired of some of you guys, man. Holy cow. So we,
some of us might be getting a little tired of you too, Kyle.
I can only imagine.
Not me, of course. Oh, but
of
no.
Of course.
I can't speak for everyone else. I just assume.
Right. Well, you know, so obviously we had Oculus Connect 3, and then after that there was the Proto Awards, and then jumped straight into the following week into Steam Dev Days. And I think it would be fun to just, you know, talk to you about, you know, some of the things that we saw, some of the things that we experienced, some of our opinions on all of these things. We're actually going to do this for two episodes and just do a little house cleaning here. We're going to make a few quick announcements here. So I'm going to do two episodes this week. I'm going to do one here with Keith, and then we're going to have another special guest on later on. Now, these are the last two episodes under the sponsorship of Intel. And so our paid sponsorship by Intel, this campaign is coming to an end, and we've got these last two episodes. So we just want to make sure that, you know, we thank Intel for their wonderful sponsorship. They've been really amazing. And, you know, while I was at Connect, I did quite a bit of reporting from Connect on their Twitch stream. If you didn't catch that, I'm sorry. You should have. It was awesome. And then a lot of social media going out. So we've got all that going on. And then, you know, beyond that, other sponsors are actually lining up. And I had no idea that this was going to be such a fun little thing. So if you are a company or a establishment or a pizzeria, a beer brand, I'm all about sponsorship now. I think that it's a wonderful thing as long as it's something that I approve of. We've got some people you can talk to about sponsorship. So the RevVR podcast would like to be the outlet, the voice for your brand to get out there and make some stuff happen. So, you know, speaking of Intel, Keith, while I have you on, this is something I've been doing with the other developers that I've had on. What kind of rig are you using currently for your gaming, for your VR gaming?
Well, before I get into that, I just shudder to think of how much pizza and beer has funded so many VR games and experiences. So
that's right.
Those of you listening, it's a really rife opportunity for sponsorship. You'll get a lot of eyes and ears watching out for you. But in terms of my PC rig back there, I'm primarily a Mac guy. I mean, I'm doing this podcast on my MacBook Pro right now. But, I mean, I have a PC because, let's face it, gaming isn't on Mac. Gaming's on PC. It's been that way for years. I don't see that changing anytime soon. So the gaming rig that I've got is a four-year-old rig that I bought from a studio that I worked for 4 years ago when they were closing the studio down. It's a Supermicro Tower. Actually, it's a server box that I got. 8 drive bays. I mean, it's got up to... I've got 12 gigs in it, but I think it's capable of at least 24 gigs. But it's powered by an Intel i7 quad core, 8 with hyperthreading. I don't know what generation i7 it is, but you probably could guess based on the fact that it's 4 years old. So, but, you know, given that it's 4 years old, it's still, you know, chugging along like a champ. I mean, I picked up just this past summer the new Doom, and it runs it just fine. I put a 1070 in it, and it doesn't complain at all. I mean, I think the only thing that I really need to upgrade in is I'm still running platter drives, and I really ought to invest in an SSD for at least my system drive and my apps, but haven't gotten around to it yet because it hasn't bothered me enough to where I really feel like I have to pull the trigger.
Yeah, a lot of people are waiting too on upgrading until they can afford to build the ultimate rig.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure that you know, once one of your major VR titles goes viral and makes you $1 million in sales in a month, you can go out and build yourself a nice big fat.
I hope, but I mean, in the meantime, if $800 falls into my lap, am I going to use that to buy more RAM and an SSD, or am I going to buy a Vive? I think I'm going to buy a Vive.
Well, you know, and it's one of those things, too, where if you're going to build a new machine, you definitely want to build it right. I've been talking to so many VR developers and gaming enthusiasts, and actually, it's kind of funny. It seems like there is a consistency that the Intel Core i7-6700K is like the benchmark for what people want to get for a VR gaming rig and for development for that matter. I find that the majority, I mean, I talked to like 100 people over the course of the last couple of weeks, and I would say 80% of them said that they had that processor. And I'm glad that's what I bought. I mean, that's definitely, you know, it's a testament to that many people in the VR space using that processor. That's what I recommend to everyone. So when you do get to that point, Keith, let me know. I'll work you through the steps of getting yourself hooked up with a nice Intel Core i7 processor.
Oh, that'd be great. I think the more pressing issue is I need a new motherboard, because the one I have now has issues starting from time to time. I can't start up my PC tonight because of that, which is another reason I'm on the MacBook Pro. Normally, I'd be on my nice, cool headset, not from Intel, unfortunately. I think it's from the SteelSeries or something. I forget who it was. But now my PC is much better equipped to handle this sort of thing. But so far, the Mac is doing just fine.
Keith, you know, Oculus actually announced at Connect that a minimum spec, a minimum spec of
yeah, we all know what it is.
Yeah, right. It was I mean, just really, really low end stuff. I mean, what happened to the? They started off with recommended spec, and then they worked to minimum spec. What are we talking about here? I mean, do we really want to be playing at minimum? Do we want to be doing VR at the very bare minimum? What's the deal? What is Oculus trying to do here?
I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to get more people to adopt VR, and not just their platform, but VR in general. I mean, you and I and most of the people that have been on your show, we're part of the VR elite. So we've kind of become snobs over the years. You know, this isn't true VR unless you're running a really great rig at least the recommended spec, or you've got to have room scale, you've got to have a 10 series NVIDIA card, this, that, and the other. But most of the people I think that want to try VR really aren't interested in a lot of things that we do in VR. I think they're totally content with watching 360 videos or looking at 360 photos. I mean, of all people, my mom is, you know, she's a middle-aged woman, and she doesn't play any video games at all. But she does her fair share of, you know, surfing the internet, but she's super into VR, and it's really kind of shocking to me, because, you know, the stereotype, you know, kind of the where VR is going right now is, oh, when you think of VR, you think of VR gaming, you know, the VR gamers, and, you know, thinking about playing Doom in VR and Dactyl Nightmare and Battlezone and, you know, all those games that's, you know, through the 90s were kind of always associated with, you know, virtual reality. And so that's kind of the public perception. But my mom doesn't play any games, and actually she just is more interested in kind of the non-gaming aspects of it, kind of the musical things. Mom's a musician, so of course she'd be interested in musical stuff. But 360 photos, 360 videos, things outside of gaming that you don't need a super PC to play, right? And, you know, part of me is thinking to myself also that, you know, Oculus announcing this min spec, and yet they still don't support the Mac. And why don't they support the Mac? Because the Mac isn't good enough for VR. Well, I know of a lot of Macs that Apple sells that are better than that min spec, but that's probably a topic for a whole other show.
Oh man, yeah, there's all sorts of really great conspiracy theories about that too. We'll have to have that conversation.
And it's not just my mom and dad that use Macs. Like at Steam Dev Days, I was hanging out with a bunch of people that were complaining about exactly that. Oh, I have a Mac. It's like, I can't use VR until they start supporting that. And I don't think Valve is doing any better in that area. I mean, I haven't tried the Vive on a Mac, and I don't know if if they even have drivers that work on the Mac with a Vive, but I can tell you that my DK2 works on my MacBook Pro just fine. But
right. Well, it's all about drivers and runtimes and all that garbage.
Yeah. I think it's going to be the first platform that jumps at that. They're probably going to get, first mover advantage on that, where, everyone that's been waiting to adopt VR for it to support their platform of choice is going to jump to whoever provides that to them first. So
the big thing we have to remember is that when they say recommended specs, minimum specs for VR, they're talking about VR as a whole. When we talk about wanting to build a gaming rig for VR, we're not talking about watching 360 video. We're not talking about looking at panoramas that somebody threw up on Facebook. And when I say threw up, I sometimes mean vomit. We're talking about playing raw data. We're talking about playing hover junkers. We're talking about playing that pinball game on Oculus Home that I'm obsessed with and strangely addicted to. You cannot look at what they say about minimum spec and expect that to be enough to play the games. This is
absolutely.
Yeah, this is about,
and the games themselves, they don't even have to adhere to that recommended spec or optimum spec, as the case may be sometimes. Games don't, they don't have to care about what Oculus says or what Valve says. Games set their own requirements. So
I mean
it's recommended from Oculus or Valve's point of view, but no one talked to the game developers. So
right. So when I look at this thing and it says, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. I'm sorry. Reverend Kyle's recommended specs is that you go out and get yourself an Intel Core i7-6700K on the Z170 chipset with an adequate amount of RAM and a decent size SSD. Oh, and while you're out there, might as well get yourself a new GTX video card as well. You need to
I can
be
vouch
running.
For that. The i7 is a great processor.
You need to be absolutely. You need to be running 4 gigahertz for that smooth, silky 90 hertz of frame wonderful goodliness. Oh yeah.
I'm falling behind. I only run at 3 gigahertz.
Oh yeah. No, you got to get at least over 3.5. That's
oh man.
Some studies
not enough
shown.
Gigahertz.
Yeah. But my in my opinion, 4 gigahertz is where you want to be. All right, so let's talk about a few things here. We went to Kinect, and they showed touch. They showed touch all over the place. The majority of the stuff that they were showing game-wise and launch titles and blah, 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 all about touch. Keith, do you have a set of touch controllers?
I do not personally have a set of touch controllers, but the studio where I'm at, we have two sets of touch controllers for some reason that rarely get, forgive the pun, touched. But I've had an opportunity to play a number of the games, mostly at what they were showing off at Kinect 3. And Kyle, I'm kind of interested in what you thought of the launch titles they were showing off.
Oh, absolutely. So I have been fortunate enough to have touch controllers available to me for several months, and like most developers in the VR space, people who attended Kinect, those touch controllers were available. The problem was is that there wasn't a lot of content. Now, they were giving these touch controllers out specifically to give developers the resources needed to be able to design their games to work with touch, and some of the titles do. So, for example, I played numerous titles with the touch controllers that were multiplayer shooter games. So I'll give you the perfect example, Dead and Buried. Dead and Buried was a demo game that you could play if you had the touch controllers, and it was basically a shooting gallery, very basic, pew, 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 and you're done. They have taken that entire title, that IP, and turned it into a full-blown 2v2 experience with the touch controllers, and boy howdy, I enjoyed that game.
Yeah, that game and Unspoken was also really, really good.
Yes,
you're basically it's another shooter game. This one was 1v1, but you basically play a wizard, And, you know, with everything that being a wizard entails, you know, you can summon a whole bunch of fireworks and just launch them at the other guy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, create a giant fireball and just kind of push it in the direction of your opponent. And I really got a kick out of that. And that really kind of shows off what touch can do. I don't think you could do that game with a controller.
Yeah. If you did, it wouldn't be fun. I mean, that's
yeah.
Just,
yeah. It would be a different game.
It would be. So, you know, I look at right now I have hanging up on the wall where I've got these little clippy things. I've got Vive Lighthouse controllers, and then right above it are hooked two very awkwardly hooked touch controllers, because there's no real good way to set the touch controllers down or hang them on hooks. I've got them sitting there. These are a previous iteration, so they're not quite exactly what we played with at Kinect. But they're staring at me and they're like, "Hey, are you gonna play with me again?" Because I haven't touched my Vive controller since I've gotten the touch controllers, and honestly, I feel like the Lighthouse controllers are bulky and kind of cumbersome now that I've used touch so much. I almost feel like, you know, like there's certain things where if I want to feel like I've got a tool in my hand, I want to use the Lighthouse controllers. But if I want
yes.
to feel like it's my hand, you know, like my actual hand, I want to use touch.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and that's why I kind of like, I like touch. I like that it is less cumbersome, as you say, than the Vive controllers. But also, as you say, and more to your point that you were making, when you're using the Vive controllers, it does feel like you're holding something in your hand. And when I think about it, I'm trying to think of a game where I'm using my hands and I'm not holding something. Because like if you're playing, like, for example, say a sword fighting game, if you're holding the Lighthouse controllers, it feels more natural to me than using touch, because I'm holding something that is a closer analog to what's in VR than it would if I were just holding the touch controllers. There's some weight to it. There's some body to it. You know, you feel like you're holding a handle of something. There's some heft there. And there's a little bit of tactile feedback, right?
Sure, yeah.
But with Unspoken as an example, you don't want that because it's just your hands, right?
Right.
But for the majority of games, this is going to sound blasphemous, but I prefer the Lighthouse controllers.
Well, and that's okay. I mean, everybody's got their thing that they prefer.
Yeah, but that's saying that in the context of the content that's currently out, right? Let me switch gears and let's talk about another game that was on the floor of Kinect 3 that I played, Lone Echo.
Oh, yeah.
Lone Echo would feel very awkward with the Vive controllers, I think. It was done very well with the touch controllers, and if we want to switch gears a little bit, they could make it work on the Vive if they gave the Lone Echo guys the new Vive controllers.
Oh, Well, you know what? Only because I don't care about maintaining any level of like continuity to episodes, we can do this. We're going to jump straight into Steam Dev Days and the Lighthouse controller prototype that they were showing off.
I don't want to steal from your episode.
Let's do it, man. Let's totally do it.
Okay.
So did you actually?
We can touch on that because I didn't go to Steam Dev Days for VR reasons. I went there to talk to some people about the Steamworks, the Steam controller API. But you know, everyone that I know from the VR community. Well, most everyone I know from the VR community and a lot of people that I knew through Twitter and social media but hadn't met in real life were at Steam Dev Day. So that was a whole lot of fun. So I got to try the new controller. I didn't get a chance to really play anything because I didn't really care. I was just there to hang out mostly.
So what do you think about the new controller? I mean, is it because I've got my opinion, but I mean, do you want me to give my opinion first or do you want yours?
It feels more natural to me than touch. Comparing them on the same playing field, the fact that you can let go of the new Vive controller and it doesn't fall down, and you aren't worried about it falling down, I think is a big improvement and something that touch doesn't have. Whenever I'm using touch, and especially because touch isn't out yet and all of the touch kits that are out right now are technically engineering samples, right? And you're not supposed to keep them. You're supposed to give them back when they're done, although I don't know if they're actually going to ask for them back. But being that, I'm always worried that I'm going to drop them and they're going to break. And it's like, oh no, you know, my precious touches that, you know, Oculus graciously bestowed upon me are now dead and broken and gone. And now I'm out, you know, $200 or whatever, what I wind up going for. With the Vive Control, I don't feel that at all because it's very securely strapped to your hand and you just don't have to worry about it. I mean, I was playing. The main demo they were doing was Gallery Six Elements, the campfire.
Oh, right.
And I was throwing pans around and throwing sticks around and fireworks around and I didn't even think that it would fall off my hand. So Valve, HTC, whoever's doing the hardware over there, they did a good job.
Did it feel like, in your opinion, do you feel like this controller is 6 months away, a year away, 2 years away from being available to us?
No, that's hard to say because I'm not a hardware guy, so it's hard for me to make that prediction. But let me say this. Last year, last May, not this May 2016, but May 2015, I played with the Vive, and I don't even think it was Vive Pre by that point. I think it was still kind of a dev kit. But I got to play that at one of HTC's offices downtown, and they were still using they call it the Mr. Hat. I call it the sombrero, but you know what I'm talking
right,
about.
Yeah.
The 3D printed, got the sensors on it. And when did the Vive ship?
Oh, it's a good question. August, was it?
August?
Was it? I don't remember.
Because that would have made it 3 months away. So, wow. I don't know. I think 6 months is a pretty safe bet.
Okay. All right.
Especially when you consider that touch is coming out very soon.
So I feel like
Valve's going to have to respond to that.
Right. I feel like, you know, I didn't have an opportunity to try it myself, but I stood next to the booth when several of our, you know, fellow buddies were in there and just really beating it up. And they all said the same thing. They loved the idea of just being able to have their hands completely open and then being able to reacclimate to, you know, where it was. And there was, you know, sensors in the fingers and all that stuff. But looking at it, it felt like it was at least a year away. So my prediction is, unless Valve is not showing off their latest and greatest of it, but they were showing off the one that works, I would say we might see a dev kit in 6 months. And then, if they go that route, and then an actual release of that product in a year. It just didn't feel like it was ready for prime time yet.
I was talking to them, and they were saying that you're right. They were showing off the prototypes that they knew worked, which, thinking about it, is probably a smart move given how many demos they gave and that it was going to be handled and manhandled by all these people, right?
Right.
They were telling me the demo they give could only detect grip, but they were saying that finger tracking on the order of what the touch can do, they said they've already got that going, but they didn't want to show that off because it wasn't as polished, it wasn't as ready as just grip. So they just wanted to play it safe and do a demo that they knew would go off, you know, more or less without a hitch.
Yeah.
So
I think that was smart.
Yeah, I think it definitely was. The prototypes we tried were definitely rough prototypes, you know, 3D printed LEDs on the outside, etc. But again, I refer you back to the demo I got last May, where they were still the 3D printed Mr. Hat, still looked very rough, looked like it came straight out of the MakerBot, you know. And then if it shipped in August, 3 months later, how do you go from there to a finished product?
It's a good question. Maybe they're very, very quick at iterating. I mean, let's hope so.
Could be. Yeah. Also, you had HTC behind that. I didn't see or hear any mention of HTC with these new controllers. Are they still a Valve partner? I don't know. Because HTC is a hardware company. So when you got a partner like that behind you, you can really make things happen very quickly if you got somebody that knows what they're doing, like HTC. I can't really speak to if either maybe Valve has a new partner or maybe they took the things they learned from HTC and are doing things in-house. It's hard to say.
You know, they very specifically said it during Dev Days that this is not a news release press event where we're going to make a huge number of announcements.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They made a big deal out of that. And as a developer there, with my developer hat on, I respected that. You know, I wasn't periscoping the whole damn thing and all that. And I wanted to see what they had to say. And I was very surprised that there was not more. Actually, there were three things that I thought was going to that I was expecting to have touched on. Number one, you very rarely heard the letters HTC spoken.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I went back.
I definitely noticed that.
Yeah. Where were those letters?
It's a Valve conference, though, and it wasn't all about VR. So
that's fine. But did you hear them say HTC once? Twice?
No. I mean, I wasn't really paying attention, to be honest with you, but no, I didn't hear him say it.
No, okay. So everybody, I mean, there was rumors about like a Vive 2, which I think is absurd. I thought it was absurd.
That's a little premature, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just absurd to even say Vive 2 is ridiculous. So those of you who are saying that, stop saying that. That's silly. Number two, the idea of multiple other partners. I mean, where the polygamy of the lighthouse, where were the other people? So where was, you know, the announcement that, let's say randomly, Asus or Lenovo or somebody else is making, you know, where those partnerships weren't announced. And I know, again, they said not a place for announcements, but you thought somebody would have been brought up maybe a little. I don't know.
Since you mentioned that, it's got me thinking. With them opening up, you know, open VR and making that available, and them making the point that, it doesn't matter what headset you want. You know, you can write a backend for this and kind of submit a pull request, and we'll put it into the main branch in GitHub. I think they probably weren't mentioning HTC because they don't want people to think of Valve and headsets and HTC as, you know, one cohesive, inseparable unit. You know, you want to think bigger. So Valve's a part of the equation for sure. And we saw lots of mentions of Valve at the Steam Dev Days, of course. But I don't think they're trying to focus on HTC because HTC isn't the focus, right? They want to encourage more hardware partners.
So let me make the prediction that one of these sensationalistic media outlets will, in the very near future, write the article, "Is Valve abandoning HTC? Rats jumping off of a sinking ship?"
Anytime I see a headline that's in the form of a question, the answer is no. Saved you a click, hashtag.
Yeah, yeah, I've been very upset recently over the sensationalism, the click whores trying to get me to click.
Quote unquote journalism. Yeah.
Quote unquote journalism. That is, geez, that
ethics, man.
Right. No such thing. No such thing. So speaking of sensationalizing things, I feel like we would be terrible people if we didn't talk a little bit about a friend of yours, a man who you are on, you know, good speaking terms with, and you know, you two are very friendly when you're together. Hell, he'll even write his name on your shirt if you ask him.
Why do you got to bring my dad into this?
We are, of course, speaking about John Carmack.
You could say I've said a few things to him, yeah.
Yeah, you have talked to him a lot, actually. At Connect, he was very accessible, and he was all over the place. And, you know,
by design, yes.
Right, right. Well, I mean, kudos to him for doing a little triage. I don't know. he was definitely out there and available, and you took the opportunity to spend some time with him. We all know John Carmack as, you know, just the creator of dreams, the makers of wishes to come true. You know, would you say you're a fan at the very least?
Yeah, I guess I'm a fan. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I respect his work.
Yeah, yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Keith is the founding father of the cult of John Carmack. He's the he's more obsessed with John.
There are friends of mine at QuakeCon that would beg to differ, sir.
Really? But okay. Okay.
If you want to call me that, okay. Right. Your words, not mine.
In the circle of people that I know, you are the most fanatical about John Carmack. Now,
I suppose that's fair.
Yeah. So you wore a shirt. This is the funny joke, the story, the and I'm going to give the quick abbreviated version here. If you want the full version in Keith's own words, go check out my Periscope page. He does a wonderful rendition of this on the Rev and Ella and Kenny show. On Periscope, so check that out. So basically, the gist is that you wore a shirt that said "Make QuakeCon Great Again" with a silhouette of John Carmack's head on it. Wore that shirt, went up to him and said, "Will you sign this?" At which point
he said, "Don't you have a bunch of things signed by me?" And I said, "No, I've never had anything signed by you. I've kept this very professional. But I suppose if I'm going to have anything signed by you, I better, you know, pick a good one." So yes. Actually kind of – I led up to that. I was wearing my Apple jacket. So, you know, I didn't lead with the shirt, right? I was talking to him about – I wanted to get his email address because I'm working on something at work that he is probably going to be interested in. And I want to, you know, share the optimizations I made with him. And he's like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And so getting that out of the way – now that I have his contact information, right.
You slowly start to unzip your shirt. So,
well, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, it did.
Kyle, maybe you should do the reenactment.
I just picture him like just.
So for the record, it was not slowly. It was I was wearing my Apple jacket, so he couldn't see the shirt because I wanted to give him the preamble first. So I explained to him that myself and my fellow hardcore fans of his keynote at QuakeCon miss him dearly at QuakeCon year after year since his departure in 2014. And in honor of his gracious generosity with his knowledge, we designed a shirt commemorating, shall we say, his orations before the faithful. And so I take off the jacket, drop it on the ground, and he just gives me this look as he looks at me wearing the shirt. With Sharpie in hand, and Kyle, imagine if I walked up to you with wearing a shirt with your face on it, how would you look at me given that scenario? That is how Carmack looked at me.
I you know, it depends. Flattered,
creeped out, impressed, I don't know. But ultimately he's like, yeah, sure. And then he signed it right there on his face. So
wow.
And I got a picture and it was great. And I got video footage too. Corey and Dylan Watkins from Monster VR, the Sweet Escape guys.
Oh yeah.
They each of them independently shot video of this momentous occasion for forever immortalizing this event.
It's a great story. It's my favorite story from Connect.
Yeah.
And
someday I will regale my grandchildren with that story of how I almost made John Carmack call security.
Well, there's always next year.
That's true. Although, to be honest with you, I can't think of a way I'm going to top it next year. I think the only way this year is going to be topped is if John Carmack shows up and asks me to sign his shirt with my face on it. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You got to make a shirt.
I'm not making the shirt. No, forget
you got to make a shirt with your head on it.
Speaking of which, for the record, the shirt that I wore was not designed by me. I'm not that crazy. No. So a friend of mine at QuakeCon designed it, put it up for sale, and I said, yeah, I have to have this. Click, $10. Yeah, ship me one of these just in time for OC3. And yeah, and I think he saw the picture, and I think he was delighted to see his creation endorsed by the man himself.
Right. That's amazing. But I do think that you need to make a shirt that has your head on it, and then you sign it and give it to him, so that way he can have that shirt.
What would it say? Make Oculus Kinect great again?
Make Kinect great again. Yeah, what would we have to do to make Kinect
great as it is? I mean, Carmack's there.
Right, right. Because, I mean, that's all we need, right? It's just Carmack.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what we need to get? We need to get him into the Last Supper photo for next year.
Oh, we do. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I was actually just talking to somebody about this. So we did a really good Last Supper photo in 2014 at the very first SVVR Expo. And we did it at a sushi bar. Well, this year we decided we're going to do it again. Jesus could not attend. He was too busy being grounded. So,
but we got his representative, so it's okay.
I took his place. I represented the Holy Lord and Savior, and I played that part. And we took a great shot. And I'll tell you what, there's a really, really good group of people in this picture, and it turned out really well. I'm very pleased to
you think of a different JC than I do when you think of Savior.
That's right. Yeah. Well. Yeah, no, it's
I definitely... kid, I kid. John, if you're listening, I kid. I'm not that crazy.
Carmack does listen to my podcast.
I highly doubt that. No offense, Kyle, but I highly doubt that.
You know what? He's a man with very little time. So if he's wasting it listening to my podcast...
He's a man of wealth and taste.
Great. Now he's got a song named it. So we talked about Touch. We talked about Carmack. We did not talk about the earbuds.
What is there to say about them?
I mean, what happened there? Did we all just get a box of earbuds?
I don't know, man. I have no insider knowledge at Oculus with regards to the selection of the swag that gets distributed year after year. I mean, I got no complaints about last year. I didn't have a Gear VR at all. And to this day, I still use my Innovator Edition. It works with my S6. In fact, the fact that I got a Gear VR last year kind of spurred me to get an S6 because, oh, well, I have this amazing Gear VR and I could be playing so many awesome experiences with this. I could be making games with this. I could be making apps. I could be debugging my friends' apps. All I need is an S6. So I went out and got an S6. Boom. Now I've got a Gear VR. You know, something for the devs. Thanks for throwing us that bone, Oculus. Cool. Something useful for development purposes, right? This year...
Earbuds. Earbuds.
Remind me again, how does that help developers?
Hey, I'll wait.
Take your time. I'll wait.
Earbuds.
Earbuds.
So what I heard was from a couple developers who are pretty close to, close to Oculus, they said, yeah, we got those earbuds in the mail a couple months back, and they said, hey, send some feedback. What do you think of these earbuds? And none of them, apparently, from what I had heard and who I had talked to, even tried them. They're like, yeah, earbuds, neat. We'll leave those in the plastic over there in the corner. Yeah, they didn't try them. They didn't say anything. I get the idea of, you know, if you're going to be doing esports and you want that, like, really close, super precision audio, you want earbuds, but who wants to share earbuds with other people? That's kind of gross. Yes. You know,
yeah.
And I'm the kind of guy, as are a lot of other developers, we're constantly evangelizing still, and we're doing demos and we're showing things off. The earbuds were not a good developer present. They were not good swag for a developer. The developers don't care, because the developers are probably either using their own earbuds or earphones, headphones, or they're using the built-in stuff. They don't need earbuds because they're not playing long-term stuff with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. They're selling these things.
In defense of the earbuds, getting the earbuds does not take away the built-in headphones. So please, I mean, I don't think anyone is seriously considering using the earbuds for demo purposes. That's what the original headphones are for.
Right.
I think the earbuds are more intended for personal use. Like if you have a riff just for you, you would use that. But of course, to your point, how does that help developers? It doesn't, right? But I can see why each individual attending Kinect got their own pair of earbuds. It's a personal thing.
Okay, sure. I don't know. I felt a little like,
doesn't make it a good present, but no. I understand why every person got one.
I mean, I'm not going to use mine, period. As a matter of fact, I know a lot of people are not going to use them. So if they're
you used them
these,
at OC3, I saw you walking around with them.
I was wearing them as an accessory, as
very
a
stylish
statement,
Kyle. Trendsetter.
It was a statement. You know, there were some people who really truly believed that they were going to get touch controllers at OC3.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect that. I just didn't. I to give
the
yeah,
popular,
I don't know.
Popular counter arguments I heard after the keynote, not leading up to the keynote, but after the keynote, and I don't know if this is significant, but read into it what you will, was that if you were at OC3, you more than likely already had touch. So why give them away?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And my counter argument to that counter argument is most of us, not all of us, most of us. And to that point, last year, we all got Gear VRs. How many of us that got free Gear VRs already had one? It's a point to think about. If you have touch, that means that you either know someone at Oculus, most likely you know Callum, you've talked to Callum. Callum thinks your project is cool enough that he's going to just give you one, or you talk to Cyber Reality or whoever the point person is at Oculus about that. You know, the average person that isn't part or isn't active in the VR community, I don't know if that information is very well publicized to that someone who's working on a really awesome up-and-coming title that they want to optimize for touch. I don't know if they would know who to talk to get the hardware outside of an official developer event such as Oculus Connect.
I agree. However, you'd have to really be living under a rock to not know.
That's fair. And that's why most of us have touch.
Right. Or access to them. I mean, yes. you, like you said, you don't have your own personal set, but you have access. You know how to get a hold of them. And if you needed to try something, you could. And that's really, I think, the gist of it. They're not just going to give away a $200 piece of equipment to everybody just to save face or to, you know, make everybody happy. I mean, that wasn't the point.
I'm going to freely admit this. That's why I wanted to give away touch. Selfish reasons. I just wanted my own.
No, I agree. Hey, trust me. I would have been the first one
to go,
woohoo,
this is
awesome.
If I wanted to use them for development purposes, I can always kind of, you know, steal time at the office and do it for my own, you know, whatever it is I'm working on.
Yeah.
It's kind of, kind of under the table. But, you know, it would be cool to have a pair of my own as a developer. They did it for Gear VR, which at the time was worth $199. So why didn't they give away another $199 thing this year?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I understand that there are a lot of people also that go to Kinect that are not developers.
That is very true also.
And those people do not have access to touch. So for them to get touch controllers would have been purely just giving them free hardware for the sake of giving them free hardware.
Not only free hardware, but free pre-release hardware.
Right.
I think
right.
that's an important thing that a lot of people are missing, is that if you're giving away pre-release hardware to people that aren't developers, that's...
There's no value in that. Right. There's no value in
that. There's a lot of support liability you're opening yourself up to, because it's like, well, you know, you as a developer, you understand, yeah, this is prototype, there's got bugs in it and stuff, but, you know, non-developers don't necessarily get that, right?
And
at least
and
not
if,
as
And if you're a news have. Venue... If you're a news venue, you had access to it all. So you had all the access you could possibly want to them. You had nothing to complain about, really. I don't know. So that's hurt feelings. No big deal. What'd you think of the parties, man? Oculus Connect 3, good parties, bad parties, shindigs?
The women in VR party was cool, I guess. I didn't go to very many parties. I mean, I went to the ones that were in the Hilton that were in that same room. There was the women in VR thing was there. That was cool. I basically sat in the corner and hung out with Livy and Suzanne and Kat and somebody else that I forget the name of, but she was hanging out with us too. And curiously, there was a photographer that kept coming up to our corner and taking a whole ton of pictures of the four of us. I wonder if they're like, ooh, diversity, look at this. We're going to put this on the website to show that we're diverse. But I mean, to be fair,
okay.
To be fair, the diversity at the male to female ratio, I'm going to say, at OC3 was much better than at Steam Dev Days.
Actually, man, I don't know. Let me think about
Steam
this
Dev
just
Days.
A minute.
I remember sitting in the VR. Was it the VR developer talk or was it the Unity talk? Either one. I think it was the VR developer talk. We were up in the front row with Olivier and John and Carl and Dell and, you know, all those guys.
Right.
And I'm looking around and it's just a sea of white guys.
See, I think at the talks, but I was at breakfast the first day at Dev Days, and it was just kind of very, I mean, there was a huge, diverse group of people. I mean, huge group of people. And they, I mean, just all sorts of, you know, race, color, creed, sexual orientation, whatever it is. However, there was just this giant group of people sitting behind us. And I was like, wow, that is like a good, like I should have taken a picture. It was a good chunk, a representation of everybody. Like everybody was there. It was great. But at the second day, I had a female companion with me that I had brought along, and
I saw pictures. Yeah, very lovely.
Yes, thank you. I snuck my wife into the mixer at the end of the second day because you know it was here in Seattle. I'm like, you know, well, I'm not gonna not take advantage of bringing her along. So I bring her along. We go over to a table. I go get some food. I'm like, hey, I'm gonna go get you a drink. I'll be right back. Leave her be at the table. I left her alone at the table. I turn around. I go get two drinks. I come back. She's got a group of gals all standing around her.
Wow.
Like, it was like, oh, alone.
What day was this?
This was on the second day. This is during the mixer.
Day.
After, yeah, it was like 7 o'clock. And just, it's like, oh, lone female. Let's go talk to her. And they, like, gathered around her. And she was, like, freaking out because she's not a developer. She was trying to explain. It's like, oh, I'm here with my husband. But it was just unbelievable. I mean, it just, I felt like experiences, both expos were very, very diverse. I mean, no, let's put it this way. If I had attended either one of those and any time had I ever felt underrepresented, then there's a problem, because I think everybody was equally represented at both of these events. And I don't think I was very proud of at least at Connect the VR community for being so open and diverse.
Considering both events are essentially by invitation, it's a good step in the right direction, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I personally did not attend the Women in VR thing. I got caught up in some other stuff that I had to do. Go check me out on Twitch. but I heard it was a great event. All the people that said that they went, that was pretty cool. I felt like there was definitely something missing, though, and it was the beach house.
Yes.
Just, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. For those of you who didn't know,
it was tried, but yeah, you'll just have to have Olivier on your show and then just ask him about what happened with the beach house, because I pretty much wasn't involved, so I can't speak to what happened with the beach house. All I can say is I'm with you. I miss it.
Well, there were two things that went terribly, terribly awry. Number one, there are no beaches in San Jose.
That's right.
Go ahead and throw that out there. No beaches in San Jose. Number two is, because of that, most people assume that there wasn't going to be a beach house and made other accommodations. So, yeah, a lot of things are changing.
There's a beach in Half Moon Bay, I hear, which is 40 minutes away.
No, not really.
More than that? Okay. About an hour away, maybe?
No, not doing it. Nope, it's too far away.
Too far away? Well, hear me out on this. Even at 40 minutes away, driving from the Lowe's in Hollywood to Marina Del Rey, where the beach house is, dealing with LA traffic, same amount of time.
Well, you've definitely got a point there. You definitely got a point there.
Maybe even a shorter distance, but same amount of time. Yeah, so I don't think it would have mattered.
LA traffic.
If you build it, they will come.
I guess so. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, it was, you know, it was unfortunate. You know, I do feel like there was a little bit of missing. And
to be honest, Blair's Airbnb was a sufficient substitute.
It was. We were fortunate enough to be able to all get together on the last night of Connect, and we recorded an Ubercast. Keith, you were among the select few dozen or so folks that were there for the recording of the Ubercast. This Ubercast is actually available if you want to go check it out. It's on the Left-Handed VR Podcast guys were there, and they actually recorded it and released it on their RSS feed. So you can go check it out, VRnews.tv. Check out Oculus Connect 3, Ubercast 3. It's pretty good. 2 hours of good conversation about Connect, a good supplement to this wonderful conversation, Keith. I think if somebody listened to the two of those, they this one and that one, I think they'll get the full Monty, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, did you come up with a clever name for the one this year? Last year was the TurboCast, which I believe I came up with.
Yeah. I think we just called it Ubercast 3 because it's not though really.
Did you spell Uber with a 3 instead of an E?
Oh, see.
See, that would be clever.
I got to have Bob go back and change it to do that.
Do it. Do it. Yes. Do it. There we go. Got to keep it up. 3 years running.
Oh man. That's good. Yeah, I originally said it was the Super Duper Ubercast, but that just sounds like a children's television show or something.
That's okay. Sometimes we all act like children.
Yes, especially when we all get together and do development conventions.
Especially when we all get excited about, you know, what's announced at developer conferences such as this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm looking at my notes here. I don't know why I was going to ask you about No Man's Sky. Oh, what makes a good game? You know what? Let's save that for another show.
Okay. I was going to say I can start on my opinions about that.
Yeah. You know, let's save that. Let's save that okay. for another show. We'll do something else that way. See, this you want an excuse.
Should I give him a taste? Of what we can expect.
Okay, go ahead.
So, what makes a good game? I'm gonna start that by my definition of what a game needs to be a game. Games have a defined goal, whether set by the game creators or by the player, whereby there are several challenges in the way of achieving that goal that need to be achieved.
Whoa.
And I say that because I'm taking a lot of these quote unquote experiences where you're basically like walking simulators, for example, like Dear Esther, for example, is a phenomenal experience. I love it. It's beautiful. You walk around, but I played it for about 5 hours and I don't know what I'm doing. It's not a game. It's more of an interactive experience. Similarly, some of the FMV games of the 90s, those aren't games. Those are interactive movies. You know, you do this thing, this movie plays, and then you do the next thing, and this movie plays. It all goes in a linear fashion, and there's no replay value. Replay value is really important. And if I talk anymore, then this is going to become a topic that we're talking about on this show. So I'm going to save it.
Wow. Yeah. No, I've got all sorts of great things. We are going to save that. That's good.
Yeah.
What makes a good game? That is the title of a future episode.
I've already got this plan. How I'm going to segue into what makes a good VR game.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah. You got the wheels turning now, Kyle.
Holy moly. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to recording that. See, this is good because now we've got a reason to do a second episode. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Okay, let's see. Let's check out some final pieces here. Obviously, Oculus Connect 3 was an amazing experience for the both of us. The big thing, though, for us, I feel, and Keith, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, Connect was all about getting together with our buddies and connecting with our friends, our peers, the
connecting.
VR community. Right, exactly. That's I think that's why they call it Connect. You know, sessions and panel discussions and all that other stuff, be damned. I go to Connect to talk to people, to connect with people. And that's really what this is all about, is the VR community growing, thriving, sharing their experiences, sharing their growth and their pains. And, you know, we've seen people fall. We've seen people succeed. So, you know, kudos out there to all of my peeps in the VR community who are still struggling to make ends meet. The indie developers, I feel your pain. Brothers and sisters of the VR community, we are here to support you. So if you are one of those struggling VR indie developers and you're looking for an avenue with which to hawk your wares, feel free to reach out to me at the Rev VR podcast. You can find Reverend Kyle on Twitter at Reverend KJR. You can find me in Gmail, ReverendKJR@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on, you know, lurking in the corners of your mind, because you've been listening to the podcast so much over and over and over again. You know, Keith, I wonder if I have a fan like you with John Carmack. Do you think I have a fan, like somebody who would come up and have a picture of my face on their shirt?
We'll find out next year at OC4.
Oh man. I'm looking forward to it. I'll have my Sharpie ready to sign some shirts. Keith, what's next on the radar for you, man? What should we be looking for from the mind of Keith Kaiserschutt?
I don't know when the last time you played VR Tron was. I kind of put that on the back burner for a while, but I did not originally write VR Tron. In fact, I'm a little surprised it's kind of taken on a life of its own, because Andreas, I'm going to say Umbach, and if I butcher his name, I'm sorry, but he wrote the original back in 99, and it's kind of an open source classic by this point. And I took it around the April right before Oculus Kinect 1, and I did it for the DK1, DK2. And I did it as an exercise, and everyone seemed to really like it. Put it up on the store and everything, so it kind of took on a life of its own. I put it up on the store, on Oculus Share, may it rest in peace, and people really got a kick out of it. Well, it kind of sat for a while after DK2, and I was working on other VR-related things and getting a job and working on, you know, VR games and things like that. But I got in touch with the original author of the game, and it's kind of reinvigorated him, and he wants to work on it again. And so now I'm thinking, hey, I'll port that to OpenVR, and then, you know, Vive and Oculus users alike can play it. And then I hope to get it on Gear VR at some point, so, you know, maybe I can impress Carmack with it. You know, dream big, Keith, dream big.
There you go, Keith. Reach for the stars. Your dreams can come true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So always experimenting, always playing around, always programming. ABC, always be coding.
Oh man, that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Are you social media dude?
Yeah, you can. I normally don't toot my own horn or promote myself, but since you asked, Kyle, sure. I am at ablitter on Twitter. ABLITTER is me.
Excellent. Cool. We'll get you a couple thousand followers. People, come out and follow Keith. He's a funny dude. Very
witty.
Most
of the people that follow me, I don't even know why they follow me, because I just post nonsense.
Well, and you retweet me sometimes, so that makes you pretty legit. That's
fair enough. Fair enough. And likewise, man. Sir.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes. So, you know, not many people know this, but I've mentioned this a few times on the I'm reinvigorating and kind of relaunching the podcast, along with a new website, logo, music, and all that crazy stuff. I was thinking about doing that, you know, by the end of the year, you know, maybe do a January 1st thing, but I don't know. I might do it sooner. Things are going along so well. I don't know, but be on the lookout for that kind of stuff. It's coming along rather nicely, and I'm very pleased. So be looking for all that, and you know, you can find everything as usual on you can go to reverendkyle.com, which redirects you to revrstudios.com, and that's where the new website will be, revrstudios.com. Keith, it has been a wonderful conversation. Then again, that's all we've been having for the last 2 weeks together.
Oh, so. Thank you. I try.
So yet again, another great conversation. You know, thanks for being you know, one of the regulars, one of the peeps I look for when I look into a crowd. There you are, standing tall and proud.
You know, this is going to make you laugh, but this afternoon, in preparation for this podcast, because Eva posted this on Twitter. She said, "Oh, all the talks from OC3 online." So I had to watch Carmack again. So I did that, and then after that, you know, YouTube recommends, "Oh, here's a video you should watch: Carmack's keynote from 2012, and the panel where Palmer was on stage with Carmack during QuakeCon 2012." So I watched that too. It's a rabbit hole that's easy to fall down.
It is.
You don't even know. You don't understand, man.
Well, Keith, God bless you. God bless John Carmack.
Yeah.
God bless the VR community.
May his Note 7 never explode.
that's what it is. Yeah, that's the ultimate insult now. It's like, yo, I hope your Galaxy Note 7 explodes. Oh, man. All right. Well, Keith, thank you for being such a wonderful guest. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being such a gracious host.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. Thanks to our sponsor, Intel. We've got one more episode, either before or after this, depending on how I release them. We're down the last two episodes on the Intel sponsorship. Thank you to them. And thanks to you all very much for listening.